Roots of the Church, Questions and Concerns. Any good in Mormonism is available outside Mormonism without the toxic cult mindset that Mormonism requires. Ex-Twitter user. Even when my belief in God was at an all-time low, I could not deny how much good had come to my life through my membership in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It seemed obvious that the church was good for people. However, the more I listened to the critics of the church, the more I started to reflect. Does it just work for me? Does it cause harm to people? Was I unknowingly damaged? The critics wanted me to believe that the Church of Jesus Christ was not true and also not good. I wondered if my positive experience in the church was an anomaly. Maybe, in reality, the church is bad for individuals, families, communities, and the world. Are critics shedding light on a problem I was unaware of? Is the church a drain on society? Do members suffer because of it? Health. God is dead. God remains dead, and we have killed him. Friedrich Nietzsche. The West is less religious and more secular than ever. Atheists undoubtedly celebrate the world's ever-decreasing religiosity. When I dabbled with agnosticism, I had to consider the fruits of secularism seriously. Would I be better off the less religious I became? Has society at large benefited from the loss of belief? For more information on this topic, I highly recommend Daniel Peterson's 2017 FAIR Conference speech, What Difference Does It Make? Faith seems to me to qualify as a kind of mental illness. Richard Dawkins. It is difficult to imagine a set of beliefs more suggestive of mental illness than those that lie at the heart of many of our religious traditions. Sam Harris. Are religious people, by definition, sick? Mentally ill? Is atheism healthier than faith? Our country is in the midst of a mental health crisis. From the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience mental illness each year. 1 in 20 U.S. adults experience serious mental illness each year. 1 in 6 U.S. youth aged 6 through 17 experience a mental health disorder each year. 50% of all lifetime mental illness begins by age 14, and 75% begins by age 24. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among people aged 10 through 14. The Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, monitors mental health and substance abuse through the Youth Mental Health Survey, a poll of high school students collected as questionnaires every 2 years since 2011. The most recent data from 2021 was stunning. 42% experience persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness, up from 28% in 2011. And 22% seriously considered attempting suicide, up from 16% in 2011. While the 2021 data might reflect some of the most difficult months of the pandemic, the trends were apparent before 2021. Historically, youth have had low rates of suicide mortality, but that began changing about a decade ago. Today, youth and young adults ages 10 through 24 account for 15% of all suicides, an increase of 52.2% since 2000. The CDC reported 105,452 drug overdose deaths for 2022, more than a fivefold increase from 2002 and double the number from 2015. The highest death rates are males 35 through 44. Government officials, news outlets, academics, researchers, psychologists, psychiatrists, parents, and teachers are desperately seeking the cause of the rise of mental health-related problems and the solution to them. Religiosity correlates with improved mental and physical health. If religion makes people sick and mentally ill, then how do critics explain the following? Harold Koenig, a psychiatrist on the facility of Duke University, and his collaborators argue that religious involvement is correlated with better mental health in the areas of depression and substance abuse. Tyler VanderWiel, professor of epidemiology at Harvard University, identified a link between attendance at religious services and enhanced health. Regular attendance was associated, for example, with a roughly 30% reduction in mortality over 16 years of follow-up, a fivefold reduction in the likelihood of suicide, and 30% reduction in the instance of depression, VanderWiel writes. Regular participation in communal religious worship appears to be associated with a greater likelihood of healthy social relationships and stable marriages, an increased sense of meaning in life, higher life satisfaction, an expansion of one's social network, the more charitable giving, volunteering, and civic engagement, says Vanderwill. Dr. Andrew Sims is the former president of the United Kingdom's Royal College of Psychiatrists and professor of psychiatry at the University of Leeds. In his book, Is Faith Delusion?, he contends that churches are almost the only element in society to have offered considerate, caring, long-lasting, and self-sacrificing support to the mentally ill, which is one of the reasons why religious involvement results in a better outcome from a range of illnesses, including both mental and physical. Sims summarizes that the majority of scientific studies, religious involvement correlates with at least the following 19 outcomes: enhanced well-being, happiness, life satisfaction, greater hope and optimism, sense of purpose and meaning, higher self-esteem, better response to bereavement, great social support, less loneliness, lower rates of depression, faster recovery from depression, reduced rates of suicide, decreased anxiety, better coping with stress, less psychosis, lower rates of alcohol and drug abuse, less delinquency and criminal activity, greater marital stability and satisfaction, fortified immune system. Dr. Sims concludes, an inverse relationship has been found between religious involvement and suicidal behavior in 84% of 68 studies. That is, those with religious belief and practice are less likely to kill themselves. This association is also found for attempted suicide. Believers are less likely to overdose or use other methods of self-harm. In his 2004 book, Who Really Cares?, Dr. Arthur Brooks notes that scores of studies demonstrate that religious believers live longer and healthier lives. People who never attend religious services are at the highest risk of early death, while those who attend more than once a week have the lowest risk. Religious people heal more quickly from severe diseases and surgeries. Dr. Brooks concludes that religious people are happier and more satisfied than the irreligious. They cope better with crisis. They recover faster from divorce, bereavement, and being fired. They enjoy higher rates of marital stability and marital satisfaction. They are less likely to be depressed, to become alcoholics, or drug addicts, to commit suicide, or to commit crimes. Elderly religious people are much less likely to be depressed, but even if they are depressed, they are less so than their unbelieving counterparts. The Heritage Foundation conducted a large-scale study in the mid-90s and summarized their results in the report Why Religion Matters: The Impact of Religious Practice on Social Stability. Among their findings, they discovered the following 15 benefits of religious practice: marital happiness and stability, stronger parent-child relationships, greater education, higher levels of good work habits, greater longevity, better physical health, higher levels of well-being and happiness, higher recovery rates from addiction to alcohol and drugs, higher levels of self-control, higher levels of self-esteem, better coping skills, more charitable giving, more volunteering, higher levels of community cohesion, more social support for those in need. The Heritage Foundation concluded, no other dimension of life in America, with the exception of stable marriages and families, which in turn are strongly tied to religious practice, does more to promote the well-being and soundness of the nation's civil society than citizens' religious observance. What about religious participation contributes so much to mental and emotional health? Do atheists have a better program than religion to promote well-being? In America's Blessings, How Religion Benefits Everyone, Including Atheists, Rodney Stark suggests that the evidence shows overwhelmingly that religion protects against mental illness. For example, persons with strong, conservative religious beliefs are less depressed than those with weak and loose religious beliefs. They are happier, less neurotic, and far less likely to commit suicide. Rodney Stark finds at least the following 9 benefits that religious people enjoy over their irreligious counterparts: greater satisfaction with marriage and spouse, less likely to have extramarital affairs. Men are significantly less likely to abuse wife or children. Mother-child relationships are stronger. Greater teenager satisfaction with their families. Reduced risk of heart disease. Reduced risk of high blood pressure. Reduced risk of hypertension. Increased life expectancy by 7 years. Why are religious people materially better off than the irreligious? Are the health benefits of being religious tied only to social support common in membership in a church community? Vanderwill says that social support accounts for only about 20 to 30% of his measured results. Self-discipline and an optimistic worldview fostered by religious faith appear to contribute more to physical health and longevity. Dr. Andrew Sims writes, "When looking at the overall effects of religious belief and practice on whole populations, there is substantial evidence that religion is highly beneficial for all areas of health and especially mental health." Indeed, correlations between religious faith and improved well-being typically equal or exceed correlations between well-being and other psychosocial variables such as social support. He adds, "This substantial assertion is comprehensively attested to by a large amount of evidence." Religion professor at the Catholic University of America, Stephen Craney, sums up the body of religious and mental health research when he said, "The relationship between happiness and religiosity is so established that many research papers take it as a given starting point. The happiness-faith relationship is strong enough that it shows up almost any way you slice the data or ask the question. Religiosity has also been found to be associated with other positive emotions that are precursors to happiness, such as optimism, hope, gratitude, and self-esteem." Is it too much to say that we could all use a little more Jesus? Doesn't all this suggest that religious observance significantly contributes to human wellness and flourishing? How do critics suggest that I offset the loss of the overwhelmingly positive benefits of church and religious observance to myself and my family when they suggest I leave the Church of Jesus Christ? Do critics have a better program than the church to support well-being? Where is it? How do I join? Does it work? I suppose it's up to each person to define what good fruits and bad fruits look like. From my perspective, more depression, less reported happiness, less marital happiness, shorter and less healthy lives, less gratitude, and so many more seemingly negative consequences are bad. Yet, these appear to be the consequences of unbelief. A big category like happiness has complicated inputs and outputs. With that said, to assume that declining religiosity has no effect or a positive effect on happiness seems far-fetched to me. If the world is less religious than ever, why does it seem that people are worse, not better off? Benefits to society. Austin, I was tired of talking about helping people and wanted to actually do it. Private conversation with a dear friend and mentor who left the church. Some critics argue that church members are good at caring for their own but blind to the issues outside their church walls. So, do Latter-day Saints and other religious organizations only care for themselves? Are their examples of charity and self-sacrifice only beneficial to their tribe? Arthur Brooks has studied patterns in charitable giving and service for many years and is widely recognized as perhaps the preeminent authority on the subject. In his 2006 volume, Who Really Cares, he summarizes several insightful findings made when comparing religious churchgoers to their non-religious, non-churchgoer counterparts. Among these findings include these 10. Religious people give more to charity than non-religious people. Religious people donate more money and not merely to their religious organization. Religious people are more likely to give money to friends and family. Religious people are far more likely to give food or money to the homeless. Religious people are more likely to donate blood. Religious people are more likely to return money that they got from a cashier's mistake. Religious people are more likely to express empathy for the less fortunate. European churchgoers are 15% more likely to volunteer for non-religious charities. If a non-churchgoer was raised in a religious home, they are more likely to donate to charity than non-churchgoers who were not. In the U.S. and Europe, churchgoers are more likely to give to charitable causes than their secular counterparts. After surveying the relevant data, Rodney Stark draws several striking conclusions in America's Blessings: How Religion Benefits Everyone, Including Atheists. Among those conclusions are, regardless of age, Stark says, religious people are much less likely to commit crimes. Accordingly, the higher a city's church membership rate, the lower its rates of burglary, larceny, robbery, assault, rape, sexually transmitted disease, and homicide. In a cleverly disguised test at Pepperdine University, weekly church attenders were more than three times as honest as non-attenders. Nearly 250 studies conducted between 1944 and 2010 showed clear evidence that religion helps to reduce delinquency, deviation, and crime. Stark states, all Americans are safer and their property more secure because this is a religious nation. Religious people are the primary source of charitable funds for religious causes and secular philanthropies that benefit all victims of distress and misfortune. They are far more likely to volunteer for programs that benefit society and to be active in civic matters. Religious students tend to get better grades than their non-religious counterparts and score higher on all standardized achievement tests. They are less likely to be expelled or suspended or to drop out of school and more likely to do their homework. Religious Americans are also, on average, more successful in their careers than the irreligious. They obtain better jobs and are less likely to experience unemployment or be on welfare. Churchgoers are more likely to read, patronize the arts, and enjoy classical music than non-churchgoers. Dr. Robert Putnam, in his book, Bowling Alone, concludes that churchgoers, compared to others, are more likely to do or participate in the following: visit friends, entertain at home, attend club meetings, sports groups, professional and academic societies, school service groups, youth groups, service clubs, hobby or garden clubs, literary, art, discussion, and study groups, school fraternities and sororities, farm organizations, political clubs, nationality groups. How do critics suggest offsetting the loss of the overwhelmingly positive benefits of the church and religious observance to society when they try to convince me to no longer be religious? Do critics have a better program than the church for benefiting society? Where is it? How do I join? What evidence do they have that it works? Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Regarding the previous sections, is it fair to lump Latter-day Saints in the broad category of religion? Do Latter-day Saints rank higher, lower, or average compared to other religious and non-religious groups? Latter-day Saints are highly religious. In the 2014 Religious Landscape Survey by Pew Research, Latter-day Saints rank higher in religiosity than any other group. Specifically, Pew Research shows that Latter-day Saints rank at or near the top in every religiosity category listed, including these four. Rate their frequency of spiritual peace and well-being as at least once a week. Rate their belief in God as absolutely certain or fairly certain. Frequency of prayer rated as daily prayer. Rate their frequency of reading scriptures as at least once a week. Pew Research concludes that nearly 7 in 10, 69%, of Latter-day Saints exhibit strong religious commitment, more than any other religious group surveyed, and substantially more than the U.S. public generally, 30%. Brent Topp, Bruce Chadwick, and Richard McClendon report in their book, Shield of Faith, that Latter-day Saint youth and young adults rank highly religious in virtually every category of religiosity. Latter-day Saints live longer lives. Christopher Layton compared four groups in Utah: A, Total Utah; B, Active LDS, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints; C, Less Active LDS; and D, Non-LDS. Active LDS males live 8 years longer than their less active and non-LDS counterparts, and active LDS females live 6 years longer than less active and non-LDS females. Ray Merrill published similar findings in 2004 regarding LDS and non-LDS people in Utah. LDS males live 7.3 years longer than their non-LDS counterparts, and LDS females live 5.8 years longer. Interestingly, reduced tobacco usage among LDS only accounted for a 1.5-year difference for males and a 1.2-year difference for females. Therefore, other factors likely account for the remaining difference in life expectancy. In a 25-year study of health habits and longevity of active Californian Latter-day Saints, referred to in the study as Mormon lifestyle, non-Latter-day Saint UCLA professors James E. Enstrom and Lester Breslow conclude several healthy characteristics of the Mormon lifestyle are associated with substantially reduced death rates and increased life expectancy. Additionally, they conclude the more active a member is in the Church of Jesus Christ, the longer they live. With the media coverage that health fads receive, why aren't we talking about the health benefits of being a member of the church? Why are less active and non-Latter-day Saints Utahns living shorter lives than members of the church? members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints living longer seems to be common knowledge, and the only type of rebuttal I've seen from critics goes something like this. I don't know if how Mormons live really means living. Life expectancy may be longer, but we sure have fewer life experiences. Reddit user, in response to the question, do Mormons really live longer? I think it just feels longer if you're Mormon. Reddit user, in response to the question, do Mormons really live longer? What do these critics think I'm missing out on by being a devout member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Latter-day Saint teenagers and young adults are better off by nearly every meaningful measure. Some former members of the Church of Jesus Christ have commented that their parents and the church were too strict. Are the high standards of typical Latter-day Saint homes damaging our youth? As a faithful member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, am I setting up my children to fail in the future? Psychologist Diana Bombrain developed a highly regarded theory for parenting styles in the late 1970s. Of the four parenting styles, she found that children raised in authoritative homes were the most likely to be socially confident, friendly, self-disciplined, cooperative, and achievement-oriented. Parents with an authoritative style are nurturing and supportive, but firm limits are set for their children. Boundaries and rules are well-defined. In a 2006 manual titled Strengthen the Family for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Session 1 is dedicated to encouraging authoritative parenting. It states, quote, "The parenting principles taught in this course most closely resemble those of authoritative parenting. This approach is most consistent with the scriptures and teachings from church leaders. According to this standard, parents teach and guide their children by persuasion, patience, and love, Doctrine Covenants 121, 41 through 44. They are willing to discuss their decisions with their children and explain their reasons for those decisions. They are also willing to reprove their children when guided by the Spirit and give them the guidance they need." Close quote. In a study conducted at the University of North Carolina, Christian Smith and Melina Denton reported their findings on American teenagers in 2002 and 2003. This sizable study was conducted across 45 states with 3,400 teens. They published their findings in their book, Soul Searching: The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. In short, Latter-day Saint teens ranked highly or at the top of effectively every measure of religiosity in their study. "I'm not saying they're all perfect," says the study's lead author, UNC sociology professor Christian Smith. "I'm not trying to idolize Mormon kids, but when belief and social outcomes are measured," he says, "Mormon kids tend to be on top." In the study and subsequent book, Shield of Faith, Brent Topp, Bruce Chadwick, and Richard McClendon summarized their results from a 17-year study across three countries. It was one of the largest samples ever collected on Latter-day Saints, with several thousand Latter-day Saint teens and young adults participating in the study. Data was collected from Latter-day Saint youth and young adults from all over the country, including the East Coast, Washington, Oregon, Utah County, and Castledale, Utah. Additionally, they collected data from Great Britain and Mexico. Here's some of the key findings from their study. This study shows that LDS youth with a high level of religiosity are not only less likely to participate in harmful delinquent activities, but also more likely to have healthy self-esteem, resist peer pressure, and excel in school. The results also indicate that religiosity is a strong predictor of academic achievement, high levels of self-esteem, and low rates of depression. Latter-day Saints have significantly more education than the general public. For LDS youth, more religiosity is correlated with more academic success. Interestingly, LDS adults who have more advanced education are more likely to be religious, which is counter to the trend in other religious circles. Latter-day Saint returned missionaries have a much lower rate of divorce and more children than their peers in the United States. The socioeconomic status of LDS returned missionaries is greater than the national average. Latter-day Saint men and women with higher rates of religiosity experience significantly lower levels of depression than the average American. The religious LDS lifestyle acts as a buffer against depression. Higher amounts of private religious behavior, such as private prayer, as well as public behavior, like church attendance, are negatively correlated with depression. Meaning, the more religious you are in the Latter-day Saint faith, the odds are that you will be less depressed. What organization or group would I rather raise my children in? If my priority as a parent is better mental and physical health for my children, isn't more active membership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints a viable choice? If I understood all this 20-plus years ago as a youth, wouldn't I likely have wanted to choose to put myself in the best possible position for better emotional and physical health? Do critics have a program that better promotes youth and young adults' health and well-being than the church? Where is it? How do I join? Does it work? Do critics have more light and truth to offer? Latter-day Saint marriages are more stable. Multiple studies and survey data sets ranging from 1985 to 2024 consistently show that Latter-day Saints have the lowest or among the lowest divorce rates compared to both religious and non-religious groups. Rate of divorce in 1985, 14% LDS men and 18.8% LDS women, compared to 19.8% Catholic men, next lowest average, and 44.7% non-religious women, highest average. They also report 6% divorce rate for temple marriages. In a 1993 study, LDS marriages had the lowest probability, 13%, of marriage disillusion of any other religious denomination, with no religious affiliation having the highest probability at 36%. As reported in 2010 in the Shield of Faith, returned missionary men had a 9% divorce rate and returned missionary women had a 15% divorce rate. The U.S. men's average was 38% and the U.S. women's average was 48%. In a 2023 study of 2,625 current members and 1,183 former members of the church, the divorce rate for temple marriages was 3 times lower than the national average. Further, former Latter-day Saints are twice as likely to experience divorce than active Latter-day Saints. In the previously referenced Pew Research 2014 Religious Landscape Study, they found 66% of Latter-day Saints are married. By far, this is the highest of any group surveyed. Latter-day Saints average 3.4 children versus 2.2 for the average Christian. 64% of those raised in a Latter-day Saint household still identify as Latter-day Saints as adults, better than all other Christian denominations. Reported in the study was that among the 350 families, no religious group was more effective in passing on their religious identity and beliefs to their children than Mormons. Frequency of feeling spiritual peace and well-being among members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints being at least once a week, the highest reported, LDS men, 80%, LDS women, 83%. Lower divorce rates are better for couples, children, family, and society, right? Wouldn't the church's track record in this regard be a massive boon to the U.S. and the world as divorce rates and the number of single-parent households skyrocket? Wouldn't children generally be better off being raised by their father and mother? I have to ask myself, why do marriage rates, more children, and lower divorce seem to be linked to membership in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? What is the church doing right? Critics are great at pointing out the one-off example where divorce was the best solution. That's great. However, what about the cases, perhaps most cases, where divorce could be avoided? Isn't a program or a church with a solid track record of lower divorce rates worth exploring? What do critics propose? Do they have a better program that creates better environments for children and families? What is that program? Does it work? How does it work? How do I join? What do they teach? Do critics have something to offer me that will provide more light and truth to my life and my family's life? Latter-day Saints are happier. I'm cautious about conflating Utah with members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but the connection does bear some merit. Utah consistently nears the top of the Gallup Happiness Poll they publish yearly. In 2013, the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index found that Provo Orem, Utah, was the happiest city in the U.S. Around the same time, Provo Orem was 90% Latter-day Saint and was ranked as the most highly religious metropolitan area in the U.S., with 77% of its residents reportedly very religious. This simple correlation does not prove that religion is the source of all happiness, but it certainly throws into question the inverse correlation insinuated by some critics. In 2012, the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religious Life released a broad study titled Mormons in America. In that study, they found the overwhelming majority of members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are satisfied in their own lives and content with their communities. Nearly 9 out of 10 reported being satisfied with their lives and content with their communities, higher than the U.S. public at 75%. Pew says this percentage is even more significant among younger Latter-day Saints. Fully 92% of Mormons under age 50 are satisfied with their lives. Within the LDS community, those with the highest levels of religious commitment are more satisfied than those with lower levels of religious commitment, 91% compared to 78%. Who wouldn't want to be happier, more fulfilled, have more peace, have more purpose? If the solution wasn't become a Latter-day Saint, wouldn't every government organization and news outlet push for more membership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? How do critics account for the prodigiously positive health and well-being outcomes for members of the Church of Jesus Christ? A reader on ex-Mormon message boards would have no idea that Latter-day Saints are statistically happier than other religious groups and especially happier than non-religious groups. So Mormons are happier, says research. Yeah, right. The reasons are interesting and I think characteristic of why so many others are not happy, but certainly not unique to Mormonism. Post on exmormon.org forum in response to a study outlining why Latter-day Saints are happier. I used to work at an insane asylum. There are a lot of happy people there too. Response to the above thread on exmormon.org. Drunk self-report is happier than sober people too. Doesn't mean we should all go around drunk all the time. Response to the above thread on exmormon.org. Mormons always report that Mormons are happier, and often it's their church leaders telling them to log into surveys and say it's so. Response to the above thread on exmormon.org. My response to comments like these is, where is the evidence? Where is the proof that Latter-day Saints are secretly unhappy when they are happier by every meaningful measure? Where is the evidence that church members are unhappy despite decades of data from sources inside and outside the church to the contrary? I get the impression that critics sidestep data by sharing anecdotal experiences of why the church didn't work for them personally. You know, that's okay. We are all on our own journey, and I'm fine with some folks feeling uncomfortable with their church membership. What is not okay is when critics attempt to use their personal experiences to suggest remedies to problems that do not exist. That way of problem solving hurts far more people than it helps. Conclusion. Latter-day Saints have better mental outcomes and reduced risk of mental illness. In a 2010 study, Merrill and Salazar concluded that active Mormons reported having the best health status and consequently the lowest levels of mental illness. In 2023, Dyer, Judd, Gale, and Finlinson summarized the body of peer-reviewed scholarly articles on mental health of members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from 2005 to 2022. In all, 46 studies were reviewed. They concluded, when comparisons are made, Latter-day Saints are typically found to have better mental health than those of other religions or no religion. What do critics suggest for offsetting the potential negative repercussions to mental health when they convince people to resign their membership? What do the critics say when they undermine the faith of good people and leave them in a much worse mental and physical state? Couldn't it be said that it is irresponsible for critics to convince people to leave the church? Do critics offer free-of-charge counseling to people they have harmed? How much counseling is required to offset the positive benefits left behind in church membership? None of the above findings surprise me or anyone with common sense. Growing up as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the phrases, "choose the right," "keep the commandments," and "I am a child of God," were instilled deep in my soul. I was consistently encouraged to serve others and to love God. The invitation to lean on the Savior's atoning power to forgive myself and others and to receive forgiveness was consistently taught. Church leaders told me it was my duty to serve a mission, so I did. I was invited to live the law of chastity, not to have premarital sex, and then marry in the temple. I was encouraged to have children, get an education, and live a life of devoted service to God and my fellow men. Growing up, the Latter-day Saint kids were generally well-behaved and studious in class. In every place I lived, the Latter-day Saints seemed to have, on average, well-adjusted and confident kids. Latter-day Saint adults and families, by and large, seemed stable and happy. Leaders in my wards truly cared and gave freely of their time and talents to others. I'm painfully aware that not everything is as it seems from the outside looking in. However, it is also clearly not true that the Latter-day Saints are despondent, miserable people. Though critics would have me believe otherwise, the data supports my experience with The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. After learning the facts, I realized I was not crazy. The church is a good place, and members are better off for their affiliation. Regardless of the critics' qualms with The Church of Jesus Christ, isn't it safe to admit that the church's program works? Do critics have a program whereby I can find more light and truth? Shouldn't the critics agree that the church helps people live fulfilled, abundant lives? Shouldn't the critics agree that our children are much better off when they immerse themselves in the church? Don't the fruits of The Church of Jesus Christ demonstrate that the church's practices and teachings are working? Although the occasional person can have a bad experience as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ, can't the critics admit that membership in the church is much more likely to be a net positive for any particular person? If not membership in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, what better alternative do the critics suggest? Is there another group, philosophy, doctrine, or teaching that produces proven results like the church? Is there another large group whose members live the teachings of Jesus Christ more often than the Latter-day Saints? I'd be curious to see research on why so many Mormons are unhappy or closeted in unhappiness. Has anyone ever seen research about this? Post on ex-Mormon Reddit. If the Reddit user mentioned above is reading this, I hate to inform you, but that research has not come out yet, and very likely never will. In high school, I complained to a church leader that the young men in my priest quorum were immature and asked if I could move up into the adult elders quorum early. I've never forgotten his gentle response. You know, Austin, the day will come that you will stop wondering what you will get out of church and start asking how you can contribute. Dr. Vivek Murphy, the 19th and 21st Surgeon General of the United States from 2014 to 2017 and 2021 to present in 2024, has dedicated his life and work to combating loneliness and its significant adverse health effects. Quote, "Social connection stands out as a largely unrecognized and underappreciated force for addressing many of the critical problems we're dealing with, both as individuals and as a society. Overcoming loneliness and building a more connected future is an urgent mission that we can and must tackle together." Close quote. Quote, "People with strong social relationships are 50% less likely to die prematurely than people with weak social relationships. Weak social connections can be a significant danger to our health." Close quote. Quote, "Today, it's widely understood that one of the most important factors in preventing and addressing toxic stress in children is healthy social connection." Close quote. In short, loneliness is a public health crisis. One of the world's longest studies of adult life, the Harvard Study of Adult Development, identifies close relationships as the variable that keeps people happy throughout their lives. A strong correlation exists between better physical and mental well-being in relationships with family, friends, and community. Stable relationships are crucial for children's development. Those relationships come in the form of immediate family, extended family, and social communities like churches, all of which suffer today. All of these relationships the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints promotes, supports, and helps. Family and church communities see a child grow and provide support throughout the good and the bad. There are better reasons to be a devoted member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints than social connections. With that said, doesn't having a local community of local church members help create a place where folks can get together? Doesn't having a calling in the church allow everyone to contribute to the same cause and build a sense of cohesion? Doesn't serving fellow ward members give somebody a sense of responsibility and belonging? Are all these things good for us? What alternate proposal do critics offer? Do they have a group or a program that does more good? Do they have a community of belonging? Does their community serve their neighbors and communities? Would their alternate proposal provide me and my family more light and truth? In a 2021 study by the Survey Center of American Life, Latter-day Saints reported feeling more connected to neighbors and communities than any other religious group in America. 72% of Latter-day Saints reported feeling at least somewhat closely connected to the people in their communities. The next closest was white Catholics at 62%. And the lowest on the list were the religiously unaffiliated at 41%. Additionally, Latter-day Saints volunteer far more than the average American and are more likely to be involved in civic and community-building leadership roles. Why do Latter-day Saints feel more connected to their neighbors and communities than any other religious group in America? Is it our doctrine, adherence to the teachings of Jesus Christ, the program of the church, a combination of these? The Survey Center of American Life also shows that Latter-day Saints spend more time with people from church outside of formal services than other groups observed. What does the church do to keep us so well connected with our friends and neighbors, even outside formal church services? Do critics of the church visit members of their community with the same frequency? Do they volunteer more than members of the church? Do they feel as connected to their communities as Latter-day Saints? Aren't Latter-day Saints recognized worldwide as good neighbors and community members? What reputation do critics of the church have? Does my family and community benefit more from my association with the church, or will they benefit more if I leave it? It has been 20 years since my priest quorum advisor gently reminded me to think of others and to be less selfish. Though I have come a long way, what I did not appreciate at the time is how much showing up to church ready to contribute would be a blessing to my life. Having a family and building a community are the hardest things I've ever had to do. Likely, my day today is much more challenging than it would have been had I stayed single, with my free time playing video games, traveling, and watching movies. Maybe I could have gotten pretty good at golf instead of shanking it every time. My day-to-day would no doubt be easier, but the responsibilities I have accepted keep me going when life gets hard. My kids, my wife, and my callings in church give me an intense amount of purpose and joy that I do not get on the golf course. I still have plenty of hobbies, and I count on those. Nevertheless, at the end of my life, I highly doubt that I will wish I had had less of an impact on my family and community to pursue less meaningful endeavors. Volunteerism. Latter-day Saints volunteer far more than the average American. Helping others helps the volunteer and the person being served. We feel good when we serve others. In 2012, the University of Pennsylvania School of Social Policy and Practices analyzed survey data for 2,664 church-attending Latter-day Saints throughout the country. They found Latter-day Saints volunteer per year 427.9 hours compared to the average American 48 hours. While many of the above-reported Latter-day Saint volunteer hours are in church-related activities, many of them are not, as reported below. Service and church-related activities, 242 hours per year. Community and social initiatives, worldwide welfare and humanitarian aid programs, 151.9 hours per year. Social causes unrelated to the church, 34 hours per year. Additionally, 88.8% of the participants surveyed paid a 10% tithing. They also donated an average of $1,821 to other social and community causes outside of tithing. The researchers commented that overall, we found that the Latter-day Saints are the most pro-social members of American society, and regardless of where they live, they are very generous with their time and money. If church members are among the most pro-social members of American society, isn't that a good thing for members and their communities? Do critics of the church volunteer more after they leave the church? Do they donate more to charity? Are they better neighbors? Do former members of the church regress to the average in generosity and volunteerism? Do former members still benefit from their religious upbringing? Do they have a leg up on virtuous pro-social values? If I left the church, would I donate more to charity and volunteer more? Would my life be full of more light and truth? Family history. When our hearts turn to our ancestors, something changes inside us. We feel part of something greater than ourselves. Russell M. Nelson. Until 2021, I was rather indifferent to family history work. I figured I would get around to working on it when I was older. Family history was even less important to me when I considered leaving The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Then, I was called to be a temple and family history consultant and asked to develop a beginner's family history class. Our ward's leaders could not have called somebody less qualified and less interested. I accepted the call, and I'm so glad I did. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints emphasizes turning our hearts to our ancestors largely because of our doctrines and temple practices. Researchers have only recently discovered the immense social and emotional benefits of doing family history. Marshall Duke and Robin Fivish of Emory University and Jennifer Bohannock of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill conducted a study to learn more about adolescents who know more about their family history. They concluded, adolescents who report knowing more stories about their familiar past show higher levels of emotional well-being and also higher levels of identity achievement, even when controlling for general level of family history functioning. Martha Dresnick in the Journal of Family Nursing 2017. published a study about the importance of family stories. She concludes, knowing one's family stories creates meaning that goes beyond the individual to provide a sense of self through time and in relation to family. This expanded sense of self is referred to as our intergenerational self, which not only grounds an individual but also provides a larger context for understanding and dealing with life's experiences and challenges. This connection across generations appears to contribute to resilience at all stages of life. In 2011, Peter Fisher, Ann Saar, Claudia Vogrinic, and Silke Weisswaller from the University of Graz, the University of Berlin, and the University of Munich published a study in the European Journal of Social Psychology. Their study found that thinking about one's genetic origin, i.e. ancestors, provides people with a positive psychological resource that increases their intellectual performance. Robin Fivish and Natalie Merrill of Emory University conclude in their 2016 paper that family storytelling has immense benefits for storytellers, i.e. parents and grandparents, and story listeners, i.e. children. Rakesh Marura from the University of Wisconsin shares the importance of family narratives in parenting. He claims that a family narrative is the way through which children and adolescents connect across generations to create self-identity. He says that by anchoring oneself in family history, one develops a sense of place and security that may facilitate self-confidence and self-competence. Family stories help families pass on values, experiences, traditions, and important life lessons to the next generations. When I read stories from my ancestors and write down my own stories, I have received firsthand the immense benefits discussed in the research above. In the past 3 years, I have emphasized family history and storytelling much more to my children. In a short period of time, I have already seen how family history gives my children and me a place in our family story and a stable sense of identity. How do critics propose tapping into this well of family history benefits? Would distancing myself from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints make family history and storytelling more likely? Does the church strengthen or weaken family ties? Do parents and children come closer together when somebody leaves the church? Would I suddenly be closer to my family and community if I left the church? What is the heritage of the critics of the church? Who are their heroes about whom they can proudly share stories with their children? If family history becomes less important as I distance myself from the church, how do critics propose that I replace this source of light and truth? Delayed gratification. All that there is and ever can be is right now, and now, and now. There is no journey and no destination. Jeremy Reynolds, The Examined Life. In high school, I sometimes wondered if this whole church thing was worth it. I wanted to have sex. I was curious to try alcohol. Friends made fun of me because I had never seen a rated R movie. Some Sundays, the water on the lake was remarkably flat, and the weather was a perfect 85 degrees. At times, the church felt like a wall that kept me from enjoying some of the pleasures of life. I remember vividly choosing to follow the church's standards under the belief that my life would be better if I had self-control. Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have ample opportunity to exercise delayed gratification. Tithing, fasting, dating norms, the word of wisdom, and the law of chastity are among the sacrificial practices of Latter-day Saints that reinforce this behavior. The ability to postpone immediate rewards in order to gain a future benefit is well documented to improve one's health, wealth, and happiness. In the oft-cited marshmallow experiment published in 1972, Dr. Walter Mischel conducted an experiment in which 4 to 5-year-old children were given a marshmallow. He promised they could have a second one if they waited 15 minutes without eating the one provided. Some waited, and some did not. Researchers conducted follow-up studies and tracked each child's progression as the years passed. A number of different areas were tracked. Quote, the children who were willing to delay gratification and waited to receive the second marshmallow ended up having higher SAT scores, lower levels of substance abuse, lower likelihood of obesity, better responses to stress, better social skills as reported by their parents, and generally better scores in a range of other life measures. The researchers followed each child for more than 40 years, and over again, the group who waited patiently for the second marshmallow succeeded in whatever capacity they were measuring. In other words, this series of experiments proved that the ability to delay gratification was crucial for the success in life. Close quote. James Clear. In a 2012 study, researchers found that religious people in particular are better at delayed gratification. Religious people tend to be less impulsive in all sorts of decisions related to money, time, and other resources. Through religious beliefs and practices, people develop a more patient style of decision-making. One of the most pervasive narratives shared among critics is that the church's sexual standards hurt people. Regarding delayed sexual gratification, Nicholas Wolfinger of the University of Utah summarizes a myriad of studies with two key statements. Quote, Americans reporting one lifetime sex partner have the happiest marriages. Close quote. Quote, the difference between having one and more than one lifetime sex partner is most consequential in predicting marital quality. Close quote. He also reports that women with 0 to 1 sexual partners before marriage are the least likely to divorce. If I left the church, would I be better at delayed gratification? Have I captured enough delayed gratification benefits from my religious upbringing that leaving the church would now not adversely affect me? Do nihilists with no journey and no destination produce better life outcomes? Is pursuing every immediate pleasure the path to more light and truth? Jeremy Reynolds' thoughts about life having no journey and no destination may work for privileged upper-middle-class Americans. I marvel that I decided in high school to delay gratification based on the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ. My life is immeasurably better due to those decisions made on faith all those years ago. Dr. Viktor Frankl, founder of Logotherapy and a Nazi concentration camp survivor, said, "It is a peculiarity of man that he can only live by looking to the future. And this is his salvation in the most difficult moments of his existence. The prisoner who had lost faith in the future, his future, was doomed. With his loss of belief in the future, he also lost his spiritual hold. He let himself decline and became subject to mental and physical decay." Real or myth? Antidepressants and LGBTQ+ suicide risk. I genuinely feel bad for former members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who see the church's overwhelmingly positive benefits for members but want to rationalize their leaving it. For this reason, I believe some critics cling to a couple of myths and misconceptions. For them, these misunderstandings need to be real. Critics commonly cite two statistics as a means to paint the church in a negative light. The first is that Utah ranks higher on average per capita in usage of antidepressants. In the most recent data from 2019, Utah was 16th in the country. The second statistic is Utah's higher than average suicide rate. More recently, in 2021, it was 14th in the country. Using the statistics in the state of Utah on antidepressant usage and higher than average suicide risk, critics then make the major leap to their conclusion by suggesting that the church and its teachings lead its members to be depressed. Usually, critics cite the above two pieces of information without any additional research to support that claim. I empathize with anyone who has lost a loved one due to mental health challenges or is currently supporting a loved one, including themselves, in a mental health challenge. Suppose the premise suggested by critics above was universally true. Why does Utah County, with the highest percentage of Latter-day Saint population in Utah, rank the lowest in antidepressant usage in Utah? Why does Idaho, with its large Latter-day Saint population, rank below average on antidepressant usage? In a 2016 study from the Journal of Scientific Study of Religion, 1.3 million people in the U.S. were surveyed, and members of the church reported a high number of positive emotional experiences and relatively high life satisfaction. If they are depressed, how is that possible? In a Gallup well-being survey in 2012, Latter-day Saints and Jews had the highest well-being of any of the faith groups examined. How? Why does the evidence consistently show that Latter-day Saints are happy, well-adjusted, and fulfilled? How is it possible that the Latter-day Saint religion can both help in human flourishing and be the cause of higher-than-average antidepressant usage and suicide risk in Utah? The short answer is we do not fully know, but there are several plausible theories. High elevation. Several studies have identified a potential link between altitude and depression suicide risk, and I cite 6 different studies. A quick look at the location of suicide deaths will show a cluster around the Rocky Mountains and Alaska. Interestingly, Utah consistently ranks lower on the rate of suicide than other states in the Rocky Mountain and Alaska cluster. Gun ownership. It is believed that states with fewer gun laws have more suicides per capita relative to states with more gun laws. Happiness-Suicide Paradox. Utah, along with Scandinavian countries, is often cited as having high rates of happiness and suicide. Scholars have suggested that the paradoxical decision to commit suicide might be driven by comparison effects. This means depressed people can feel worse if they are in a broader context of happier people. Rurality. According to the CDC, in the past 2 decades, suicide rates have been consistently higher in rural America than urban America. Word of wisdom. Some suggest that because Latter-day Saints do not drink alcohol, coffee, or smoke, they use antidepressants as a coping mechanism instead. There is, however, no solid evidence for this correlation. Larger families. Latter-day Saints have larger families, meaning our women go through postpartum more frequently than the average. This is an idea, but there's not enough evidence to support the claim yet. Mental health treatment facilities. In 2020, Utah was ranked 7th highest out of 56 states and territories in terms of the number of mental health facilities. Wyoming, with 917 mental health facilities, was ranked number 1. California, with a population almost 13 times greater than Utah, is ranked 53rd, with only 79 facilities. A shallow reading of the number of mental health facilities may lead someone to believe Utah and Wyoming have a significant mental health crisis. The reality is that it is likely more economical for mental health facilities to bring clients from out of state to Utah and Wyoming than treat them in places like California. Additionally, the barriers to starting an addiction treatment center in Utah are significantly lower than in other states. How many people come from out of state to Utah for treatment? Are the antidepressants from out of state patients in Utah's mental health facilities counted toward the total Utah antidepressant usage? Juvenile treatment facilities. Utah is the leader in the nation's troubled teen industry, receiving some 20,000 kids from all over the country from 2015 to 2022, far more than any other state. It is said that this is because Utah's juvenile treatment facilities have a good track record, and Utah has favorable parental rights laws. Do these facilities use antidepressants for their clients? How much do they prescribe? Are the antidepressants from out-of-state patients in Utah's mental health facilities counted toward the total Utah antidepressant usage? The premise that the church's teachings and high standards lead people to be more depressed and commit suicide at higher rates is highly questionable. At minimum, the issue is more complicated than critics portray. If anything, Utah's high active membership rates in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints may prevent a hypothetically worse outcome for Utah. Much can be shared regarding Latter-day Saints' positive mental and emotional outcomes from previous sections. This statement from Daniel Judd in Religiosity, Mental Health, and the Latter-day Saints, a preliminary review of literature 1923 to 1995, sums it up nicely. Quote, "Analysis of the data indicates that Latter-day Saints who live their lives consistent with their religious beliefs experience greater well-being and marital and family stability, and less delinquency, depression, anxiety, and substance abuse than those who do not. This review of research also concludes that there is very little support for the assertion made by some that religious belief, practice, or affiliation is antithetical to mental health." Close quote. Isn't it irresponsible for critics to universally claim that the Church of Jesus Christ is bad for mental health, especially when the opposite is much more likely? LGBTQ+, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and suicide. In 2019, the Utah Department of Health surveyed 86,000 Utah teens. In the group of LGBTQ-identifying Latter-day Saint teens, an alarming 28% reported having seriously committed suicide in the last year. Latter-day Saint heterosexual teens had seriously committed suicide at a lower 13% rate in 2019. The critics capitalize on this difference in suicide ideation and attempt to explain the gap with false accusations like, the church's anti-LGBTQ+ policies are causing harm to our LGBTQ youth. LGBTQ youth do not feel safe and welcome in Latter-day Saint communities and thus commit acts of self-harm. Both statements above are highly suspect and borderline dangerous. Dyer and Goodman point out in the same 2019 data set that 49% of Utah's non-religious LGBTQ teens had seriously considered committing suicide, compared to 22% of non-religious heterosexual teens. The national average for suicide ideation among LGBTQ youth is 47.7%. When compared side by side, 13% of Utah's heterosexual teens that are Latter-day Saints had seriously considered committing suicide, compared to 22% of Utah heterosexual, no religious teens. And then 28% of Utah's LGBTQ teens who are Latter-day Saints compared to 49% of Utah's LGBTQ teens who are not religious. The question we should be asking is, what is the church doing in Utah to significantly reduce the amount of suicidal ideation among LGBTQ-identifying teens? For LGBTQ teens, that reduction is over 42%. Dr. Michael Staley, the suicide prevention coordinator at the Utah Office of the Medical Examiner, admits that friction between LGBT sexuality and religion in Utah may not be the driving factor behind suicide among Utah's youth. Despite the common narrative that Utah's youth suicides arise from intended and unintended intolerance toward LGBT people, Dr. Staley states, there is no data to show that, period. Dr. Staley attributes Utah's higher than average suicide rate to reduced oxygen to the brain because of Utah's higher elevation. Congratulations, Mr. Staley. Your research is already being used by Mormon apologists to prove the church is not responsible for Utah's dead queers. So, mission accomplished, I guess. Comment on an article summarizing Dr. Staley's research. When Dr. Staley pushed back on the connection between suicidality in Utah and the church, why did so many critics get upset? Wouldn't correctly understanding the correlation between the church, LGBTQ+ issues, and suicide be vital information? Why do some critics want it to be true that the church harms our LGBTQ+ identifying members when that claim seems to be untrue or at least unclear? Depression and suicide are serious issues, and we within the church and those who have left have a responsibility to care for those who are struggling. We must not float overly simple false theories that do more damage than good. For more on this topic, please read the LGBTQ+ Concerns and Questions section. If you or someone you know needs help, please consider one of these resources listed on the website. Fruits of the Church Conclusion. Biggest mistake of my life was raising my kids in the church. X, Twitter user. I've done so much of the work of deconstructing the self-hatred the church instilled in me. X, Twitter user. I just want them to admit that their hate hurts and kills. User on ex-Mormon Reddit. What church are these disillusioned former members talking about? It sounds nothing like the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I've attended different wards and stakes in different states and countries for decades. These comments imply teachings that are nothing like the lessons I've heard in primary, young men's, elders' quorum, Sunday school, sacrament meeting, the temple, or general conference. Sure, we've all heard the occasional ridiculous comment from a brother or sister in the ward. That's the risk of building a community based on geographic boundaries. But there is beauty in giving grace and forgiving one another. Wouldn't it be more honest for the disenchanted folks quoted above to say, my parents or my specific church leader instead of the church? Wouldn't that be more accurate? A stable identity is one of the greatest gifts the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has given me. I know who I am, where I fit in the story, and where I am going. President Russell M. Nelson said in a worldwide devotional for young adults, May 15, 2022, quote, my dear friends, you are literally spirit children of God. You have sung this truth since you learned the words to the primary song, I am a child of God. But is that eternal truth imprinted upon your heart? Has this truth rescued you when you confronted temptation? I fear that you may not have heard this truth so often that it sounds more like a slogan than divine truth. And yet, the way you think about who you are really affects almost every decision you will ever make. So who are you? First and foremost, you are a child of God, a child of the covenant, and a disciple of Jesus Christ. As you embrace these truths, our Heavenly Father will help you reach your ultimate goal of living eternally in His holy presence. I promise that you will experience spiritual growth, freedom from fear, and a confidence that you can scarcely imagine now. You will have the strength to have a positive influence far beyond your natural capacity. And I promise that your future will be more exhilarating than anything you can presently believe. Close quote. Ultimately, I have to teach my children something. Why not a stable identity, eternal self-worth and hope, self-reliance and hard work, faith in Jesus Christ, that their future will be exhilarating. We will all experience hardship in this life. Why not experience it with hope, gratitude, community, forgiveness, and purpose?